Now back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford in Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus. When you hear the sound coming,
hear the drums drumming, I want you to join. Welcome back into Sports Time. Bryant and Brett with you as we start our second hour on this Monday afternoon. We got to talk some college football and some college basketball. And joining us like he does every single Monday afternoon, it's David Cobb.
Joining Bryant and Brett now on Sports Time is national college football writer for CBS Sports, Memphis native and Tennessee grad, who you can find on Twitter X at David W. Cobb. It's David Cobb.
David Cobb joins us now to talk some college football and college basketball. And it was a surprise to me this morning, but I'm sure it's not a surprise to you, David, that we've got to start with the news this morning from about Brendan Sorsby getting his injunction. And as of right now, if everything stands as it is currently at 4:04 on Monday afternoon, Brendan Sorsby will be playing for Texas Tech after serving a 2-game suspension.
Guns up
is right. What did you make of the news that came out earlier this morning?
No, I mean, I'm surprised by the ruling. I'm surprised that, okay, so for one thing, initially the judge on this case was a 2-time graduate of Texas Tech University, recused himself. So all these articles that are saying it's a Lubbock judge, it's actually a Fort Worth judge. So Fort Worth is where TCU is. And it's not like the hometown Texas Tech oil territory, you know, guns up judge who just said, oh, yeah, I'm going to help out the Red Raiders this time. You know, that's not what this was. Like, this is a Fort Worth judge. So I'm not going to say, like, that the Fort Worth judge wouldn't be influenced on some level because judges in Texas are elected. And if you vote, you know, if you make a decision that goes against the state university, even if you are all the way over in Fort Worth, I guess there could be political ramifications for you. But my point in saying that is it's not like this was the, like the judge in the Trinidad Chambliss case. He was from Calhoun County, just a good old Mississippi boy, whatever. Now, that case is different because Trinidad Chambliss actually had a case. Mm-hmm. Now, this Texas Tech deal is there was no case. Like, Brendan Sorsby, there is absolutely nothing here that you can look at and say the NCAA is in the wrong. I mean, it is a generations-long principle in this country that you cannot bet. I mean, Pete Rose got a lifetime ban in the game of baseball for doing what Brendan Sorsby has admitted to doing. And yet, for whatever reason, the NCAA cannot defend itself. Judges, even in jurisdictions where you wouldn't necessarily expect it, now going against the NCAA, it is... It's shocking, guys. Like, this one is really, really surprising. Like, the NCAA, we've gotten used to them losing in court, but I really didn't think they were going to lose this one, and they did.
Yeah, and it just shows that the NCAA, this is the last clutches they have over anything, because if they can't enforce eligibility and they can't enforce something this brazen, what do we have them for? Why are you paying these? The institutions are paying dues to them.
Right. The only thing the NCAA is good for now is hosting a basketball tournament. Yeah, that's it. And we all understand now that, like, you know, if the NCAA dissolves and whatever, like the Big Ten and the SEC, I mean, they can go and kind of just do their own thing. And I think these decisions kind of pushed us closer to that reality transpiring sooner than maybe a lot of us envisioned. So this one is meaningful. I mean, a lot of them have been, but the eligibility stuff is one thing. Oh, do I get 5 years or six? Do I get a medical red shirt? Do I get a COVID year? What about JUCO with Pavia? Right, like all that is okay. That's sort of little squibbles in the eyes of Congress or whatever. Well, is this going to be enough for Congress to say, okay, we got to do something? Because I think this Protect College Sports Act is a little too broad and a little too expansive to really get the momentum that it needs. Especially, like, you don't have the Big Ten and the SEC on board with this bill. So, like, how are you going to get it passed? It goes way too far. and some of the stuff it tries to do. And the two biggest conferences whose congressional representatives are not going to be in favor of this. Like, there's just no chance that that bill is going to pass. But can we pass something, or are we finally, guys, going to get to the point where we acknowledge and accept that the only logical answer for, quote, saving college sports is collective bargaining? It is the only way that college sports is going to be salvaged. And I don't mean college football. College football is a money-making machine. It will exist and be okay in some capacity. But the financial structure that allows for us to have over a dozen non-revenue sports on most campuses, if that structure is going to continue to exist in anything resembling its current form, there has to be collective bargaining that dictates and governs the rules of college sports. If we don't figure that out and get there soon, like, there won't be anything left to salvage. It'll just be the Big Ten and the SEC playing football, and then some combination of other sports that manage to survive.
How many? If we ever went Super League, what's your lowest number? What's your highest number of teams that make the move into Super League?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Big Ten and the SEC, as currently constructed, would both be in that, and then you would have maybe some of the best from the ACC, a couple maybe of the best from the Big 12. You know, Cody Campbell doesn't want Texas Tech to be left behind. He'll throw around as much money as he feels like he needs to prevent that from happening. So, you know, maybe 40 at the most is what I would say.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
Does that mean everybody currently in the SEC, all 16, make the move to Super Conference?
I can't see any way where, I mean, a lot of things change. A lot of things have transpired that you could have never imagined. But the, all right, let's kick Vanderbilt out thing, like, it's kind of a wild reality to contemplate. But I'm not sure I can get there in thinking that's what happens. The only way that really, like, we get to that point is if the SEC and the Big Ten get into bed with private equity. And I'm not going to rule that out either. Like, the Big Ten has flirted with it. Some other schools are pretty far down that road now. When you get private equity involved, they're going to say, look, the value at, you know, what Vanderbilt or what Northwestern or Wake Forest or Rutgers add to you from a value proposition, it's just not worth it. You got to get them out of here and then create more matchups between bigger brands. And, you know, so if private equity gets its say in how college sports are configured, then some of your lowest of the low Big Ten and SEC type of programs could be in trouble. But until we get to that point, and we're not there yet, especially in the SEC, I don't think we're close to having that conversation.
What do you think the timeline will look like now for the NCAA to appeal and we get more information on this Brendan Swords? Because I am glad in all of this, I am glad that we were at least proactive enough to start it this early, because it feels like no matter what happens, we will have definite answers by the time the season starts. But when do you think we get our next kind of real update about this?
Yeah, it'll depend on how quickly they can get their appeal together. And then every state is different. So the process in Texas, I would assume on some level, maybe looks different than it did in Alabama, where, you know, if you recall, the Alabama State Supreme Court actually did rule against the University of Alabama and Charles Bediako and sided with the NCAA on the eligibility case there for Charles Bediako. And so he was ruled out for the rest of the season. So is there a similar process that could take place in a similarly fast fashion in Texas? That's kind of the next step in the Brendan Sorsby case, is the NCAA's appeal. This is absolutely one worth appealing with all of their might and all of their vigor and all of their collective weight, because you just he has admitted to placing over 40 bets on his own team in college football, and now we're going to say it's okay for him to play. I mean, I just, do we have to explain to everybody like why that's an issue? It's the integrity of sports that are kind of on the table here. And you look at the NBA, I mean, like Malik Beasley, is his entire basketball future is hanging in the balance right now because he did this.
Millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. He did this in the NBA.
Of his salary. I mean, yeah.
So it's you know, it's just absolutely insane that college sports can't keep somebody like this off the field, especially when, you know, like with Betty Occo, okay, I can buy the irreparable harm deal because Alabama was probably going to pay him a mill to play basketball last season. What was he making in the G League? Like maybe 100K? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, there's a big difference there. Well, Brendan Sorsby actually has a financially viable alternative. It's called the NFL Supplemental Draft. He could have gone to that. He's a good enough player to make an NFL roster. Like, he is good enough to be on a 53-man NFL roster. He could have turned pro after this past season at Cincinnati and probably would have been drafted on day two. Like, the idea that this is doing irreparable harm to him is incorrect. It's not true. Like, he could go to the NFL. Like, there is a financially viable alternative out there for him. So the rationale even in the ruling doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. You know, for some of these college basketball players, you know, the best they could hope to do is the G League. Well, then sure, like yeah, playing another season. Like Diego Pavia, not an NFL prospect, not going to make a 53-man roster. Yeah, not being able to play college football, that does do irreparable financial harm to him. Although he's free to go get a job in any other profession that he so chooses, with a degree from Vanderbilt University, like nobody would be crying for him. But like with Brendan Sorsby, there is no weight on that. Like, he's good enough to play in the NFL. You can make more money playing in the NFL than you can in college. So I just don't buy that part of the argument.
David, you ask rhetorically, do we have to explain this? I'm afraid we do, just like we have to explain that it's not the same case as Trinidad Chambliss or Owen Heineke, the linebacker at Oklahoma. Everybody just wants to throw everything into one big pot and go, look, sameness. And here's what I'm already hearing of. Well, betting's legal now. Yeah, it is, but we also know the standards and the scruples of betting on your own team, and so far his only saving grace is that he never bet against his own team. Where's the IRS? How's a 20-something-year-old have access to this much money? Was he filling out all the right paperwork at tax time with all this?
Well, that's the other thing, too, is he was getting family members and friends to place these votes for him. So what exactly all the legal charges and legal ramifications could be, I don't know.
You do anything with a telephone that's crossing state lines and that's illegal.
Right, right. Like, there are definitely, like, you think back to the Iowa situation. It was like a state gaming commission that actually flagged the betting that a lot of the Iowa State and Iowa players were involved in several years back. And so, you know, there should be some legal ramifications here. Again, it's like every state has their own laws around gambling and what's okay and what's not and the parameters. But yeah, like, I mean, it should be obvious that if you're betting on something that you have inside information about, that it's unethical. And that's clearly what's going on here. And, you know, it's just, I don't want to be like doomsday or whatever. Like, I'm still really excited about this college football season, and I'll watch it and enjoy it and write about it whether or not Brendan Sorsby is playing. But it is a sad day. Like, it is a sad day in college sports when the equivalent of Pete Rose gets off with a slap on the wrist, you know, and Pete Rose got a lifetime ban and had his reputation
that he agreed to.
Yeah, but he had his reputation permanently sullied. And, you know, look, Brendan Sorsby going to be – and I'm not even saying – look, I'm not saying he's a bad guy. I'm not saying he's a horrible person. We all make mistakes, especially when we're young. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean we're absolved from the ramifications of them. You know, he wants to play the mental health card,
anxiety.
It's one of those deals, I mean, I don't even know what you say to that. Like, okay, like – we understand we have a mental health crisis in our country. Anxiety is a real thing. But like you don't get to use those as excuses for unethical behavior, and then avoid the consequences of it. So it's, you know, and again, it's like he could have still gone and played professional football. So nobody's saying he's a horrible person, and I do think he obviously acknowledges that he made a mistake. But I mean, for crying out loud, like if we're gonna just, you know, look at the college basketball case right now with all these players who are accused of betting on their own games. Like, you know, how do we say that their stuff is any different? Like, they know they threw games. Like, they there's a point shaving scandal. Well, what's the difference? Like, mm-hmm. What's the difference? You know, well, you bet. Everybody can bet on their own games. Like, it doesn't matter anymore.
Well, so the Alabama State guys threw the game. They wanted to lose, and so far that hasn't been alleged with Sorsby.
But the line is so thin.
I agree.
Like, the line is so thin, and that's where the problems come in, is because if you can bet on your own games, betting for or against, you know, your team, mm-hmm. I mean, the line on that is how easy would it be to flip that if you're mm-hmm. Brendan Sorsby? All right, I put $100 down on my team to win last week, but you know, I don't think the public knows we've got a bunch of injuries that our yeah. coach isn't talking about, and I've seen. You know, our twos and threes, they're not very good.
Yeah, and so-and-so's homesick. So-and-so's girlfriend broke up with him. That's why you can't have it, because they've got information that nobody else can have. David, may I be the heartless guy that wants to take it to just the field to play with Sorsby? Can Texas Tech win it all with him on the field?
Yeah, they're defensively. I mean, the only thing that was holding them back last year was a subpar offense. Well, they pay Brendan Sorsby $5 million to come in and help fix that. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call them a tier one title contender, but they're a tier two title contender. I mean, this is a college football playoff team that with Brendan Sorsby at quarterback is going to be the pretty clear favorite to win the Big 12. So, there are major on-field ramifications in the Big 12, especially when you consider the guy who would have been playing, Will Hammond, is coming back from a pretty serious injury. And so now I will say that this ruling includes a 2-game suspension for Brendan Sorsby, but those games will be a bye game against a nothing burger and then a Oregon State, which they should win that game pretty easily. So now that the on-field ramifications are massive, like it turns Texas Tech from a little bit of an afterthought in the national picture to a team that has very realistic national title aspirations.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You brought up the basketball betting probe that's been going on for the last, what now, year and a half, 2 years? Alabama State, the most recent, with four players being involved. One of those players, Tony Madlock Jr., the son of then-Alabama State head coach Tony Madlock, now Memphis assistant Tony Madlock. A lot of people have been asking. We talked about it on Friday when this news came out. Based on everything that has been put out there so far, it doesn't seem like, and it seems like it's done now, it doesn't seem like Tony Madlock had any involvement or any knowledge of this. Do you think that is the case? Do you think this stands and that he will not be involved in this and his employment, his job status with the Tigers will not be impacted by this?
I mean, I would surely think so. You know, I mean, there have been examples of coaches, like you think back several years ago, like the Alabama baseball coach
sure.
got hit for sharing information. You know, I would really hope there's no involvement on the coaching level here, because that's just the next level. Like if a coach ever involves himself in something like this, one, you've got like your entire, like I can understand it almost on a certain level from the players, especially at a low major college basketball program, because one, you're not really probably making much NIL. Two, even if you are, your earnings window is pretty short as a college basketball player. Well, as a coach, even at the low major level, you're making good money, especially as a head coach, and you have more than a 5-year window. Like you have your whole career to continue making good money, and you put that at risk when you dabble in something like this. So I think there's a pretty clear delineation just from the
absolutely
how did we get here standpoint. I can kind of understand how we got here as players. You're on a bad team. You feel like your season isn't really that meaningful anymore. Somebody's offering you enough money to move the needle, mm-hmm. and fall victim or fall prey to that. I just have a harder time getting there with any coaches, you know, being involved with something like that. So But, you know, even though these guys I don't think are eligible anymore, if we do get into a position where active players, and it did happen this past season in college basketball, where active players are accused of throwing games, at this point, I don't think it would be a guarantee that that a local judge wouldn't put them back on the floor, even when they've been proven to have thrown games. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
When does the judge tell a coach that he should be playing somebody?
I mean, it it happened with Terrence Shannon a few years ago at Illinois. It was Illinois had suspended him.
No, I mean, like the backup quarterback's parents sued that he should be the starting quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I know. I don't. At this point, nothing would surprise me, Brett. Nothing would surprise me. It just makes me like sad for our judicial system. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't get all really political at all over really anything. It's certainly not in my like public persona at all. But you know, like when you talk about faith in the judicial system, like, decisions like this don't help with that. When we're having a little bit of a moment right now as a nation where it feels like people don't trust the judicial system, when judges make rulings that are clearly wrong, I mean, it's just it's just baffling. It's just baffling. And so, I hope today is like a wake up call for, I don't think it'll be for Congress, because I just have so little faith in Congress, but, you know, for somebody out there who has the power to help push this thing in a better direction, that like, hey, we got to get serious about the future of college sports, or else this is just going to become something that we can't recognize or trust. Mm-hmm. When we start putting players who have knowingly bet on their own teams onto the field of play again after they've admitted to doing so, like we've officially gone down a really dark path, and how we come back from that, it's gonna be a long and difficult journey, and I don't know if we can. I think college football will continue to be played, be enjoyed, and be watched, but I don't think we can take that for granted like we used to. Because when you look at NASCAR, you look at boxing, you look at you just take it for granted. You just take it for granted that it's going to be healthy, it's going to be vibrant, and it's going to be it's going to resemble something we've always enjoyed. But days like today just kind of make you wonder if we can take it for granted like we always have. And that's kind of a little bit of a scary place to be.
Yeah, no question about it. Last thing for you, David, maybe the most hard-hitting question of the day. What do you enjoy doing more, mock drafts or the field of now, at what, 70, whatever we're at now, the bracketology stories?
I had my mock drafts last week, and I've got another bracketology coming this week. Enjoyed a little time at the beach last week, so my stream of content has been a little slow. Plus, you know, they kind of gave me a little bit of an off season this year, which was nice. So I've been, but I got a couple of big ones coming. I got the mock draft, or not the mock, but the 70-16 mock that bracketology nuts. That'll be updated after the draft withdrawal deadline and all the last kind of 11th hour transfers. So that'll be in a few days. And then I got a big Power Four quarterback tiers and categories story that's coming out later this week. So we'll have a lot to talk about as it pertains to actual on the field, on the court sort of stuff next Monday. Assuming there's not another earth shattering college sports court ruling that we have to debate.
I'm not going
to
hold my breath. It feels like those now come on a weekly basis. But David, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy your week, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, David. David Cobb joining us, and he wouldn't give me a straight answer on that. I'll answer it for him. If I was in that position, I would hate doing the bracketologies. I would much rather enjoy doing the mock drafts, especially now that we're at a million teams in the bracket. No thank you. Give me the mock draft. But we need to get to another break when we return. We talked earlier about Omaha. The field is set. We got to talk the Ole Miss Rebels. Michael Katz from the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. He covers the Ole Miss baseball team. We'll talk with him about what got Ole Miss to Omaha. We do that next on Sports Time.
Join the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin, for Wolo and Friends. Weekday mornings from 10 to 11 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford in Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Welcome back in Sports Time. Bryant and Brett with you. And we've got to talk some Ole Miss baseball as they're getting ready to make their way up to Omaha again. They'll start their first game at 6 o'clock on Friday. We'll have the coverage right here on Sports 56. It'll be on ESPN. But joining us now to talk some Ole Miss Rebel, Michael Katz from the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. He joins us now. Michael, thanks so much for joining us. This has been fun watching this Ole Miss team advance all the way to Omaha again. But what have these last two weekends been like covering this team? Two road environments. They go up to Lincoln for the regionals and Auburn this past weekend for the Supers, and they look unbeatable right now. What have you seen these last two weekends from the Rebels?
I think that's what's so cool about college baseball and the college baseball postseason, particularly when you look at, you know, before the NCAA tournament, Ole Miss lost to Missouri, the number 16 team in the SEC tournament, was coming off a series loss at Alabama, had been playing pretty well before that. But, you know, that I think that loss to Missouri, you know, it was a low-stakes game, but maybe had people thinking, you know, what is the ceiling of this team? And you look now, and they're 5-0, again, swept through their regional and their super regional on the road. I mean, if you look at the path they've had to take, you know, obviously, you know, took down a pair of number one seeds on the road, but then, you know, that Arizona State team with one of the best offenses in the country had to play them twice. Auburn, really, really good team. Nebraska is a really, really good team. They've earned it. They have earned this. And so it's been, you know, when the bracket came out, there was a part of me that said I can see the path with the matchups, because so much of this is matchups. And, you know, in 2022, it just kind of came together, and obviously they won the whole thing. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen here, but, you know, I'm not like a big Team of Destiny guy, but, man, they're playing really, really well when they need to.
Michael, they are, and I sent this to you earlier, and I referenced it earlier. In 2022, went 5-0 to get to Omaha, outscoring 46-11 plus 35 advantage. This year it's 29-20, 5-0. Two one-run wins, two two-run wins, and 1 3-run win. They have really, really threaded the needle, but good teams win close games.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I remember in 2022, you know, I think they went to Miami, and they ended up blowing out Miami when they played. And they played Arizona, I believe, twice, and I think those both ended up being blowouts, particularly the last one. And obviously the Southern Miss series had its moments. But yeah, you know, they made it look easy in 2022. They've really had to earn this, and they've won games in different ways. I think that we've looked so much at this Ole Miss team, particularly offensively. It's been home run or nothing, right? But they have found ways to score runs when they need to in important situations. You know, going back to Lincoln. And against Arizona State in those extra inning games, you know, the walk and the sack fly, those are situations that Ole Miss hasn't always struck in this year. They have struggled at times with runners on base, but they've made it work when they needed to. And then going back to game two against Auburn, you know, you've got to get hitless through the first five innings or whatever it was, and all of a sudden you start stringing some hits together, and Judd Uttermark gets the big two-run double, and then obviously the home runs after that, but they've just figured out ways to keep things close, and I think that's, one, a testament to how good the pitching has been, but two, the timely hit has been there, and at times during the regular season that wasn't always the case, but, you know, it doesn't really matter now. They're doing it when it matters the most.
And Federico's catch may go down with Deshaun Stribling's catch in the Sugar Bowl.
Goodness, I was watching that, and we were down the right field line So we had a pretty good view, and we saw it, and the people I was next to, we all looked at each other, and our jaws kind of dropped. And again, that's just sort of one of those things, like, things need to just go right for you in the postseason sometimes, those unexplainable things. Obviously, there's a lot of talent in a play like that, but, you know, I was watching, the USC-North Carolina game yesterday, and they didn't make, USC didn't make those plays with a chance to go to the College World Series, so... A lot of things have to kind of go your way, and obviously you make your own luck to an extent. But yeah, incredible. I mean, I couldn't believe that he held on to it. I couldn't believe all of that play. I mean, again, it's sometimes I hate Team of Destiny, but man, there's a lot of things going for this team right now.
You got to have that, Michael. To the Bianco detractors, 2022 and Dog Pile in Omaha, that clammed him up for a while, for a good while. But the Tennessee Tech exit and last year the Murray State exit, it brought him all back. If he could go on and win yet another one, without winning it and with winning it, shouldn't it really clam some people up for forever?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I don't want to say, like, winning the championship in 2022 ended the conversation, because obviously, you know, fans are what they are. They're fanatics for a reason, right? But I think that going back to College World Series again, the third time under Mike, especially with, you know, I mean, you look back to after the 2022 season, those two rough seasons after that that's what got, you know, fans talking again, right, about, was it a flash in the pan? But you look at what Mike did, and he completely sort of reinvented the way he does things. And he talked about this after game two against Auburn, that he had to become more of a manager than a coach. And that was taking his hands off a little bit more, not calling pitches like he did his entire career leading up to that, and hiring Joel Mangrum I think it's hard when you've been running a program for two decades a certain way, and you look yourself in the mirror and realize you have to do things differently. And he did that. And last year, you know, they took a major step forward, and obviously they're back in the College World Series. So I think context is obviously really important, too. I think when you look at it, I mean, this is one of the best coaches in America. I don't think, you know, listen, I've only been here 5 years, and this is their second trip to the College World Series, so maybe I have a skewed look at it. But I don't know how you could ask, listen, would you love to host the Super Regional and go to the College World Series every year? Of course, but that's just not the way it works.
No.
What Mike Bianco has done and the consistency, I don't think there's any question that this is one of the best coaches in America.
Yeah, no, it's been super impressive to watch. You mentioned Judd Uttermark earlier and what he has been for Ole Miss, not just this season, but the last couple of years, but now, you know, really stepping up this season for the team. What has he meant for this group, not just in the postseason, but really the season as a whole?
I think him and Will Furness, I kind of grouped together a little bit because those are two guys that came in right after they won it all. And boy, those first 2 years for them were really bad. I think I combined 17-43 in the SEC.
Wow.
I mean, it was bad, bad. And they stuck it out, and they decided they wanted to, rather than jump ship, they wanted to be the guys who spurred the change and got the program back on track. And I mean, you can't help but have respect for guys like that who, you know, when times get tough, don't turn the other way and run. These are guys that love Ole Miss, and they decided they wanted to be here. And so, obviously, you know, the statistics are incredible. You know, Judd is the all-time home run hitter at Ole Miss. He's been about as good of an ambassador for Ole Miss baseball as you can ask for. And the same for Will Furness. And they've both just developed, and it wasn't always easy for both of them. I mean, you know, Will was, you know, he was good from the start, but maybe not what he is now. And Judd Uttermark, you know, had injuries, and he really didn't play a ton his first 2 years. And, you know, just for them to lead this team to this point and be, you know, two of the superstars and faces of the College World Series team, I think there's so many things that we look at in college sports right now, and we say, I hate the way things are going, and the transfer portal, and NIL, and blah, 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 blah. I think that those two guys are something you can look at and say, like, this is what's right with college sports. They earned this one.
Mike, when you made that move and loaded up everything to move from Los Angeles to Mississippi 5 years ago, and we rode back up the elevator together after being on the field at the Sugar Bowl, and you asked me, you said, where's this rank? I said, best college football game I've ever been to. And you just kind of shook your head like, wow, can you believe these last 5 years for you?
It's pretty incredible. Honestly, I left California actually in 2015 because I was in Boise, Idaho for
That's
a bit
right.
when I was in Wyoming. So it's been an interesting path for me. But it's interesting because when I got here, I heard a lot about how it just never quite goes right for Ole Miss and something always happens. And it's just like, man, Ole Miss got close and something happened. In 5 years I've been here, it's been really, really good. You know, I've seen a couple of New Year's Six games. I've seen an incredible run to the college football playoff semis where they were, you know, a few inches away and maybe a pass interference away from playing for the national title. Two College World Series, one title. We'll see what happens here. What men's golf did last year, what the softball team did. But track and field is done. It's been pretty incredible. To
Sweet
see
16 all, for Beard last
the Sweet
year.
Sweet 16s, yeah, in both men's and women's. It's pretty incredible the all around programs that Ole Miss has right now. So when I took the job, Lane had just finished his first year. This was not a program that was nearly in the state it is now. Ole Miss had just gotten their hearts broken in I believe the Tucson Super Regional. That year before, and so it's just been very different. It's been cool to see the programs, do what they've done, and as a sports writer, you don't root for teams, you root for stories, and you root for people and people with good stories. And I've just been honored to. I've seen some really cool stories and covered some really good people in my 5 years.
Yeah. Where do you hang your PhD shingle in Lane Kiffin, having covered him at SC and at Ole Miss?
Huh. how many people can put that on a resume, right?
No one.
Yeah.
You're in.
Yeah. No. It is very. It is funny, and obviously, yeah. I was he. He got fired from SC the year after I left, but I was there when they were the preseason number one team and finished unranked, and it was just this huge disaster. And that was my memory of Lane. And then what he did at this program. I know people have a lot of thoughts on Lane right now, and that's fair given how things ended. But I don't think you can dispute the turnaround that he had for this program. So it has been very. It's been interesting to see. Different versions of the person and the coach, and he's not here anymore, but you can't discount the success he had here, and it's very different from my last memories of him at USC, because I remember spending my New Year's Eve in 2012 in El Paso for the Sun Bowl against a Georgia Tech team
three,
that had to file
nothing,
a waiver.
Wasn't it?
No, it was bad. It wasn't that bad, but this was a Georgia Tech team that had to file a waiver to be eligible for the Sun Bowl because they were under 500.
Jeez.
And they beat USC. So those were like my last memories of that era. So it's been a wild ride.
Yeah, no, that is a wild ride. One last question on Ole Miss baseball before we let you go. I saw this story making waves yesterday after kind of all the talk about Ole Miss advancing. Dom Decker last year knocking Ole Miss out at Murray State. He transfers to Ole Miss, now back in Omaha. That's a wild story.
Yeah, no, it's he's a junior. He's got another year left, obviously. But man, if you're trying to win, if you're trying to go to the College World Series, you're trying to get that guy, right?
No,
he has been so good for Ole Miss. You know, you always wonder how. I mean, we saw him play in the regional, obviously, last year. But you wonder, like, over the course of a 60 whatever game season, like how it's going to translate. And he has been just so good for them at the top of the lineup. He draws walks. He gets the timely hit. he had never hit a home run before this year, and he's got 10 this year.
Wow.
And he's played a really good second base, and you know, off the field, he's just been a really good leader for them. And you know, Hunter Elliott was the only guy who was still on that College World Series team. So I think to add another guy who has College World Series experience is big, and you add that in with the veterans that they already had who had kind of seen everything. I think they have a really good mix of personalities in that locker room. And, Dom Dupker has been a huge addition. You know, listen, are the numbers going to tell the whole story? No. But I think, as Mike Bianco said, he's just a really good baseball player, and I think you need a couple of those.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Well, it's going to be fun this weekend as Ole Miss kicks things off in Omaha. But, Michael, as always, thanks so much for joining us. It's been a blast, and we'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. Appreciate you guys.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you very much. No, I confused the 3-0 Oregon State over Pitt in the Sun Bowl to that 21-7 thriller he had to set through against Georgia Tech.
That is a thriller right there. That is a game that you for sure want to be at.
New Year's Eve in El Paso.
Not fun. Does not sound fun at all. But hey, you know, I think you could spend your New Year's Eve in worse places. It might be hard, but I think there are worse places to spend your New Year's Eve. So
I had that 2022. It was the only hope I had 2 weeks ago when the brackets came out that maybe, just maybe, and on the verge of maybe.
Yeah, we always talk about it. There's something to getting hot at the right time, playing your best baseball at the right time, and it feels like Ole Miss is doing just that right now.
And we know before the first pitch, there will be an SEC team in the finals.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
From the right side.
That's exactly right. So all
in the year, I thought it was down. And this is the trouble with stereotyping and generalizations. LSU wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think Florida was right. Mm-hmm. Tennessee, not what they have been.
No.
I didn't think it was vintage Arkansas.
No.
I didn't think it was very good Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it was very good Vandy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a lot of heft right there.
Yeah, those are the teams that over the last 10 years have been the dominant teams in the SEC. So to have those teams down and kind of these other teams stepping up and filling the place, I mean, Oklahoma, Alabama, Georgia, Texas is now coming into the conference. To have these teams kind of make up for all that, exactly. So it's different, but there's still certainly a ton of SEC in there. And like you said, we'll have we'll at least have a SEC team in the finals. Well, let's get to another break, and when we return, it'll be time for Big Number of the Day.
Add a little fun to your lunch break. Join Johnny Radio for Sports 56 Happy Hour from 11 to 1 every weekday on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
To Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by Landers Ford in Collierville. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
And she says, I wish that I could.
Big Daddy.
Hello, Big Brand.
It's a guy, he wants to be big, then he gets big, he doesn't want to be big anymore, then he gets small, but the suit's too big.
Big Daddy.
The big boy.
You're a big guy.
I think she's trying to pull a fast one on Big Daddy.
The big number of the day.
Well, Brett, my big number today actually comes from Major League Baseball, which surprised me when I was looking for a big number earlier today, because I figured I'd be able to find a basketball big number. But this one jumped out at me, and when I saw it, I stopped everything. I said, this is my big number for the day. My big number is the number 7. Jacob Mizorowski of the Milwaukee Brewers has a .20 ERA over his last 7 starts. He's only given up 1 earned run in 45.1 innings pitched in that time. That's the lowest ERA by an MLB pitcher over a 7-game start span, with a minimum of 30 innings pitched since Bob Gibson from June 6th to July 6th, 1968. Bob Gibson, in that span, had a .14 ERA through those seven starts. So Jacob Mizrowski has been electric over these last seven starts.
That was the year of the pitcher. That was 1.12 ERA for Gibson, and for Denny McClain winning 31 that year for the Tigers.
Yeah, that's right. So good company to be in if you are Jacob Mizrowski, and he has been huge since being called up last season up in Milwaukee.
Who's your National League starter, Mizrowski or Ohtani in the All-Star game?
Mizrowski.
And I think a lot of it will have to do who had gone most recently and kind of on schedule, but good options. My big number is 23. That's the NBA wins in finals for the San Antonio Spurs as a franchise. They've won it all five times, so four times five, and they lost one time, 4-3. So that equals 23. They got to get to 24 or this is over.
Yes. No,
tonight's got to be win number 24 in NBA finals or it's taps.
Yeah, you know, I'd certainly feel better about the Spurs if they get the win tonight. But, man, I don't know. I still think it's going to be tough for the Spurs. Even if they win tonight, I just got to see more from the Spurs team for me to really believe that they're going to come back and win this one. But tonight, if they win tonight, that certainly helps things.
I wonder if you've seen this. I saw a story we were talking last week about if the Knicks win – we just know they'll be game one on opening night of the kind of Eastern 6:30, and game two probably rematch of Spurs and Oklahoma City in the second game. And I saw a story that the league's already said it's going to be Knicks against Boston at Madison Square Garden, no matter what. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen that. No, but I think it makes
sense. I saw
it
at one place, and I don't know how.
Yeah. Well, I think it makes a lot of sense. And look, I mean, we saw it last year with the doubleheader. I mean, why not have a doubleheader? No matter what happens, you start with the Knicks and against Boston, and you end with OKC and San Antonio. I mean, I think that would be an unbelievable first night of the NBA season.
And the Knicks are always the first game on Christmas. Mm-hmm. Winning at all, does that vault them into primetime, or do they again lead everything off on Christmas Day?
Yeah, I think you start with them. I mean, it's kind of tradition at this point. And at that point, you're so far removed from, you know, if you give them the first night and have the whole ceremony there, by the time you get to Christmas, I know it's the unofficial start for a lot of people, but you're so far removed at that point. You keep tradition where it is. You let them start the day and then figure everything else out.
They're the Lions on Thanksgiving. They go first on Christmas.
That's right. And I love it. I don't want it any other way. So, no, it'll be fun, and I think I said it earlier. I think the NBA, the storylines are insane. If the Knicks finish this off and win this series, not only do you have all the stories of Knicks winning the first one in 50 plus years, you've got all the stories of Spurs and Victor Wembanyama. They make it, they lose. What happens now? You know, kind of the start of almost that villain arc of they lose, and he kind of goes and locks himself in the gym for the off season, and then we see that team come out, you know, ready to fire on all cylinders next year.
You know, tonight it's going to be the announcement, and you said it's going to be very much like going to the airport of the things that are going to be checked for. And I sure hope that there's not a single one, and I bet there's not. I bet there's not a single – there's not going to be a handgun seized at checkpoints tonight at Madison Square Garden. But I would like to see what got seized.
Sure, yeah. What all are they what did somebody bring thinking
it's not
going to
be too large a shampoo bottle at the airport?
No, definitely not. So, yeah, it's a very good question. I've already seen some pictures of the lines that have already formed to get in, and it looks like chaos out there. So
yeah, it does.
Good for them. I'm glad they're the ones waiting and not me. I would not be happy if I had to stand in those long lines to get into the game. But hey, I guess if the opportunity presented itself, I'd be in those lines and I'd be having the time of my life. I'm sure they're having fun. I mean, the way that we've seen the watch parties and all that stuff throughout the playoffs, I would assume they're having fun in line. I doubt it's a very dull environment standing in line. So I'm sure they're
what's
going to
be
fly.
The concession take tonight inside the garden with it this long until tip
time?
No
kidding. That is that's where, you know, these hot dog vendors and stuff like that up in New York. I mean, you're just pushing your cart up and down that line.
This is your shot.
Who needs some food? Because I've got it for you. So I'm sure we'll get more pictures and videos of that here in the next hour as we get closer and closer to Game 3 tonight at Madison Square Garden. But let's go ahead, wrap up this second hour, and when we return, we're talking the NBA, we're talking the Grizzlies. DeMichael Cole, the Grizzlies beat reporter over at the Commercial Appeal, he joins us next.
We'll be right back.